I am Reese Tisdale, and this is The Future of Water, Bluefield's platform in which we talk about all the ways which companies, utilities, and people are addressing the challenges and opportunities in water. Today, it's going to be all about liquid death and the growing questions about bottled water, the incredible size of the bottled water market, but also concerns or risks to utilities, both from a perception point of view, but also from a customer point of view. So today I'm going to be talking with my colleagues, Keith Hayes, co-founder of Bluefield Research, and Eric Bendler, Bluefield's research director. So given that it's 2022, let's jump right into the conversation with Keith and Eric to talk about what we're seeing in the bottled water market and key considerations. All right. So I'm joined here by Keith Hayes and Eric Bendler. Keith, how's it going?
Hey, going all right. How you guys been?
Pretty good. I'm, you know, sort of starting out the new year pretty excited about it. It's always good at the beginning of the new year. Well, everything's upside, I guess, at this point. And also I noticed yesterday the days are getting a little bit longer by, you know, minute increment. So that's good. Eric, what about you? What's going on?
Yeah, everything's well here. Just finally got my home office set up. So I'm enjoying sitting in a real chair, sitting in a real desk. So that's a big positive for the new year.
Have you in Chicago, have you had to shovel snow yet? Or are you guys?
Oh yeah. We went and bought just a big snow blower and snow boots. I've got, you know, geared up with everything I need for the winter. So big bags of salt. So it's going great.
Nice. Well, so new year, new winter, sounds great. But look, I think one of the reasons I wanted to get together with you guys is talk a little bit about, of all things, liquid death. Seems a little scary, a little bit ominous. But Eric, this actually came from you. Why don't you tell us all about it? What is liquid death and why should we care?
Yeah, so this is a company that I've kind of had my eye on for the past couple of years. They're basically a canned water company. They sell, they claim that it's 100% mountain water from the Alps. They sell it in these kind of 16-ounce tall boy cans, aluminum cans as opposed to plastic water bottles, but obviously similar type of an idea, you know, portable water. And it's really a big, you know, really interesting kind of a marketing and brand presence that they've carved out. So it's, as the name would suggest, it's kind of this very heavy metal themed brand. They sell a lot of clothes and merchandise. You know, their tagline is murder your thirst. And they've got flavored water options like mango chainsaw. You know, they do a lot of marketing campaigns around tattoos and skateboarding and stuff like that. The reason that we're talking about it today is that they just at the beginning of the year, I think on the 3rd of January, we saw that they just closed their new Series C funding round. So they raised $75 million. Overall, they've raised about $125 million over the past really 2 to 3 years since they were founded. They've also had a lot of like celebrity investors like Tony Hawk, Wiz Khalifa. And this most recent round was led by Science, which is a kind of a, you know, early stage VC that has a lot of consumer focused brands. But I think it's just really interesting. I mean, we've obviously, a lot of our research, a lot of our commentary is focused on the municipal sector, but the impact of kind of bottled and I guess canned water on the utility sector and on the way that people think about water and consume water is it's really interesting. And the fact that this company is raising so much money, so much more money than your typical water tech company raises. I thought it'd be kind of a good one for the pod.
Yeah, I think we have been kicking this around. It's a bit of a running joke, but I mean, there is a more serious matter or message behind it. I mean, you know, it is, whether it be in a can or not, it's what we would classify as bottled water. I mean, Keith, you've worked a fair amount looking at the bottled water sector and alternative sources to bottled water. Can you give us a little bit of idea about, you know, like that sector in and of itself and how to think about it?
Yeah. So, I mean, it is fascinating, and obviously within the context of what we do at Bluefield, because on the one hand, we're talking about basically a fast-moving consumer goods business selling, you know, these units of plastic packaged water. And on the other hand, we're thinking about the municipal water sector, which is a public services business. It's an infrastructure business, and that is very different from fast-moving consumer goods. So they're very fundamentally different types of businesses, although the end product itself uniquely is the same. It is drinking water, right? But then, you know, the types of users we're thinking about specifically with bottled water, I think really needs to be subdivided probably into, you know, there are countries where they don't have safe drinking water coming out of taps if they have taps and distribution networks at all. So they don't have any other option but to drink bottled water or trucked in water from some other source. And that's very different from the sort of comfort-based drinking water sales of bottled water. So, you know, U.S. consumers that like their Hindi 20-ounce units when on their Stairmaster, for instance. So whether we're talking about developing world, and this is solving a gap in terms of delivering any kind of water versus, you know, choosing based on preferences and having a lot of options in richer countries, those are two very different things. So I think we need to be careful when we're talking about bottled water. Are we talking about liquid death, obviously, which falls into that second category of probably wealthier consumers that are choosing based on some of the brand around it, versus, you know, if we're talking about trying to bridge this massive infrastructure gap of people that don't have drinking water.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of the research that the consulting team has put together in the past, and we're talking about a bottled water market of hitting numbers of, you know, 250 plus billion liters of consumption. So we're talking, you know, hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars at the end of the day for a packaged water product that comes out of the tap, and particularly in developed markets. Developing markets is a whole nother matter. I mean, like, to your point, Keith, you know, I remember when I lived in El Salvador, an emerging market, you know, they would sell, it wasn't even bottled, it was in plastic bags, and you just bite a corner off the bag and drink it. And because there really wasn't much tap water, particularly when you're on the bus or on the road or in the city. So, well, Eric, I mean, to that point about liquid death receiving all this funding, I think it raises another question. Is this, I mean, a simple question would be, is this a threat to municipal water utilities, or is it more than that? What other nuances can we capture from this message of so much money going to a bottled water company?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I think it is fair to classify it as kind of a threat. And I'll give you an example. I mean, so in terms of the way that utilities are, the way that the kind of utility business model works and the way that consumers are, you know, interacting with their water utilities, a lot of it comes down to willingness to pay, right? It comes down to whether or not, you know, a utility's ratepayers will allow them to continue to raise rates, to make the investments that they need to improve their infrastructure, to improve the quality of their service. And if they have this kind of negative perception of tap water, it challenges that, it kind of complicates that relationship. And so bottled water really comes in as it's positioned as this safer, this cleaner alternative to tap water. You know, you get these images of, you know, pristine mountain springs and, you know, untouched by humanity. And that's the image that the bottled water kind of industry is giving off. And I'll give you, I mean, a really specific example. Just last night, actually, my father-in-law sent me a newspaper clipping that he came across with a bunch of, I mean, it was kind of framed as a news story, but it was definitely an ad with a bunch of these like really menacing statistics about, you know, X millions of Americans are served by municipal water systems that are in violation of the Safe Drinking Water Act, and this many million Americans are drinking, you know, radium. And the end of the article says, you know, the best alternative is enhanced bottled water. And then there's a phone number for a bottled water company at the bottom, you know, and I mean, these stats are, I don't doubt that these stats are true. Although it is maybe fair to point out that there's a pretty broad range of reasons that a utility could be in violation of the Safe Drinking Water Act. And they're not necessarily all related to water quality or to health. A lot of it is testing, you know, keeping up with their testing regimes and things like that. But, you know, I think it's no secret that tap water is far from perfect. We've got issues like PFAS and lead and you know, other heavy metals, not the liquid death kind of heavy metal, but, you know, lead and manganese and copper that we talk about all the time, you know, at Bluefield and on this podcast. But we only know this information about the utility sector because municipal utilities are subject to pretty stringent testing and monitoring and reporting requirements. And bottled water companies just don't have the same level of regulatory scrutiny put on them that allows them to get away with these messages of, you know, we're safer, we're cleaner, we're healthier than your municipal tap water. But bottled water also, you know, often has a lot of the same problems. And actually, I've seen, you know, a couple different sources out there that say, you know, anywhere from half to two thirds of bottled water just comes from municipal sources anyway, right? They're just taking it from the municipal system, bottling it and selling it to you as a pristine glacial spring water. And it's really, you know, very rarely the case.
Yeah, I mean, Keith, you raised a good point when we were talking actually about this press release, which kind of showcases a lot of different things. And I don't want to be too preachy about it. Maybe I will in a minute. But I mean, one of the points you raised was really this is a marketing company and not really a bottled water company. You have anything to add or say about that?
I think where the business of providing bottled water is not necessarily ensuring the, you know, they're not really talking about their filtration systems. They're not talking about a lot of the infrastructure related. They're not talking about their quality compliance or, and by the way, a lot of bottled water is drawing from the exact same sources that municipal tap water is drawing from. Yeah. It's just not going through pipes. It's going right into a plastic bottle. So the source, a lot of times that they're selling could often be the same source as where the municipalities are drawing from. So what that means then is that, yeah, purely, I mean, what you're selling there is marketing. And I think, you know, as much as we may grumble being sort of water industry insiders, the truth is that there may be some things that water utilities, municipal drinking water suppliers need to get better at marketing. They need to get better at addressing some of those scare tactics that Eric was referring to before about the quality. They need to probably talk more about how sophisticated and how rigorous they are regulated in being compliant and what that means in terms of safety and how, you know, it's a fundamental public service that, you know, at the end of the day, a lot of taxpayers are actually financing. So it is something to keep in mind that, you know, this is instructive for the way that municipal utilities need to communicate to their customers. I think we partly saw that as well. I mean, during this pandemic, right? I mean, you guys probably remember when COVID hit, we saw bottled water consumption, I think it jumped like 20% over the course of like one quarter in the US. And a lot of that was partly people climbing into their bunker and hiding away and saying, maybe you need to stock up on water. But also it was, you know, there was some false information about there about could you actually get COVID from drinking your tap water, which to us may sound absurd, but in the mainstream, those are messaging issues that need to be tackled head on. And so, you know, I think some utilities did learn about that. You know, a lot of them put out statements about, you know, your water is being treated a lot. It was probably an opportunity there to showcase a lot of the investment that is happening to make safe drinking water. But, you know, unfortunately that happens in the context of telling you, you know, and it's a bit ironic here, this is not going to kill you. Whereas you have another company that's making significant profits saying we're selling liquid death.
Yeah. I mean, it is crazy. And I think one of the things that I find, I guess that was part of my sort of stemming back to my first question about, you know, what does this mean and why does this matter? And the utilities maybe not be directly competing. It's not a 1 gallon goes from the utility to the bottled water company and this, therefore it's lost revenues. If anything, I see it as bottled water. And I think this is what you guys are getting at least partly, that it's really the perception that bottled water is so much cleaner or is cleaner than tap water. Therefore, there's distrust, there's unease about water quality, and then that drives consumers to do different things, whether it be drink bottled water or, you know, it's, and if there is distrust, it's also harder to raise rates if they're needed for basic infrastructure. I mean, there's a whole lot of collateral impacts on the water utility that creates problems. So, I mean, the other thing that I think that's also worth calling out is, you know, it's just the price of water. I think some numbers that your team had come across, Keith, was, you know, globally bottled water is about 60 cents a liter in the US, closer to 90 cents a liter. But, you know, and there, if you get to like the Caribbean or islands, it goes way up, and part of that is shipping, but that is a big part of it as well. I mean, I think if I remember correctly in looking at the Liquid Death press release about their fundraising, you know, one of their biggest channels to market is by e-commerce and through Amazon. And so we're literally shipping water around the world. And we're not just talking Fiji. I mean, Fiji water is another good example, or at least brand, where supposedly it's coming from so far away. But in this case, you know, it's the same idea. It's hard to believe that it's cost effective to ship a case of water across the country or around the world to meet someone's thirst when they have a tap in their home. Because if you're buying through Amazon, I suspect you probably have a tap in your home as well. That's what's kind of crazy about it. So, I mean, when it comes to bottled water, though, let's look at sort of that market. I mean, we talked a little bit about emerging markets, but are there, Keith, are there alternative, or I guess are there other markets or key markets where there are opportunities for bottled water? And are there alternatives to bottled water in and of itself, even outside of the municipal utility?
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess first I want to say that particularly in like emerging markets, you know, one of the reasons why bottled water consumption is so high, even if there is a decent amount of, you know, infrastructure, is there's just a lack of public trust in the water utility. So probably the biggest example of that would be like Mexico. So Mexico is a country where I think they have the highest per capita consumption of bottled water. There's zero trust in public municipalities to supply drinkable water. And what happens then is you get into this vicious circle of there's no public trust in water, so they don't pay for the water, which means that they can't finance the infrastructure, which means they can't improve the public supply of drinkable water, which means everyone's going to keep buying bottled water. So there is that sort of dog chasing its tail aspect of a public infrastructure sector that is not working in a lot of countries. And a lot of countries, meaning much of Latin America, a lot of places in sub-Saharan Africa, for instance, they don't even have the distribution networks in place to say that it's not working. So you have much more of a distributed, like off-grid approach in supplying bottled water. And then, you know, I think other markets, a lot of it is the marketing around bottled water and more of the kind of the comfort factors around it that I mentioned before. So that's kind of the dynamic I see, which is that bottled water market is going to keep growing. And it is just a reality of until you have a public drinking water supplier that can gain the trust of customers, which really is a luxury in much of the world, this market dynamic is going to continue. Are there other sources out there for providing, I think, bottled water, as you were saying? I mean, we've looked at different technologies. Obviously, you know, desalination and reverse osmosis is a huge component to supplying drinking water in places like the Middle East. Israel, I think now is at about 60% of its drinking water is coming through desalination. It's obviously a lot more expensive, but it's one of the only options they have. They don't really have much groundwater. And then the other, you know, more innovative solutions we've looked at are atmospheric water generators. So those are companies like The Source or Zero Mass Water, which is a supplier of hydro panels that pull moisture out of the air and provide drinkable water. And we may be seeing more companies like that that are innovating using different material science to provide drinking water. So, you know, I think there are other technologies out there. The question is, are they scalable and cost effective and easily deployed? And right now, for a lot of places, bottled water is really still the only game in town.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is, you know, when you're talking about places like Ghana or the rest of Sub-Saharan Africa, Central America, yeah, there may be one or two taps in town. And that's one of the challenges. You know, and I think your sort of dichotomy between, you know, emerging markets and luxury markets, right? So I know that's been a strategy for those atmospheric water generators in some cases, and just water treatment or wastewater reuse solutions providers for island countries or hotel chains or luxury areas or communities. You know, how do you not only lower cost, but provide resilience to, you know, existing infrastructure that may be inadequate, whether it be year round at times of, you know, drought or climate disruption, or just even seasonality. I mean, that's one of the biggest issues in a place like the Caribbean, right? It's very seasonal. You get a huge influx of people at certain times of year. So how big do you build your water treatment system and supply system? Is it for sort of the base load or base population, and then you build on top of that or deliver on top of that bottled water and other sources? Or do you build out, you know, things like reuse just to make it more efficient? So, Eric, one question for you is, have you, back to Liquid Death, have you ever bought, it's probably sold in a 4-pack, that would be my guess. Have you ever bought a pack, and how much is it?
Yeah, so I have not bought any. I did actually just see some on the shelf in a Whole Foods a couple of weeks ago, and I think that's one of their main kind of distribution channels in the US is Whole Foods and other types of retail outlets. But I think they're sold, yeah, like I think by the bottle. I think they do also maybe 4 or 6 packs of these 16-ounce tall boys. But I mean, I think it kind of bring back to a couple stats that I wanted to throw out there, but just based on Reese, what you were saying about kind of that willingness to pay aspect, and then Keith also the trust element. I mean, in terms of the pricing differences, you started to move in this direction earlier, Reese. Like, so if I look at, you know, ounce per ounce, the price of municipal tap water versus bottled water versus something like Liquid Death in North America, for example, bottled water is about 600 times the price of tap water. Liquid Death is about 2,000 times the price of tap water. Just an outrageous, sum compared to what you can get, as you said, for just like turning on your tap in your kitchen. But even with that in mind, even with these just outrageous price differences in mind, as we're kind of talking about, it really gets back to this issue of people just not trusting their municipal supplier. And that might be completely justified in a lot of parts of the world, you know, in kind of developing markets where there just isn't healthy or clean or safe tap water. But in these luxury markets like the US, it's just kind of outrageous that people have this perception, but the feeling is so strong. I mean, there was a Consumer Reports survey from 2019 that put some pretty mind-blowing stats out there. Like, you know, a third, 34% of US consumers regularly avoid tap water if they have the opportunity to. You know, a third of potential drinkers are not using tap water. 17% don't drink any tap water at all from this Consumer Reports survey. So a sixth of the US population, you know, is just completely shunning this product, even though it's, you know, 600 times cheaper, 2,000 times cheaper than some of the alternatives. And that's in a market where the water is actually pretty safe and healthy and reliable. Certainly there are parts of the country where it's not, right? There are issues. There are issues with lead and PFAS and arsenic. And you know, I don't want to downplay the fact that there are problems with municipal water systems in the country, but the vast majority of the population has reliable access to healthy, clean, safe water that's just as clean as what they're getting in a bottle. And yet, you know, 17% don't drink any at all. And so I think that really, it gets back to this issue of kind of the marketing and branding, like that, you know, this, you know, utilities, the majority of public utility of the majority of drinking water utilities in the US and in many other parts of the world are their municipal government run organizations. They're not in the business of marketing. They don't have a brand. They don't have a brand identity. They just provide a public service and, you know, they don't necessarily, I think utilities certainly are getting better. We're seeing a lot more utilities using social media or using, you know, brands and mascots and marketing campaigns and really trying to get more engaged with their customers and their ratepayers using, you know, using digital technology, using kind of customer engagement apps and portals and social media. But I think we're still a long way from utilities really having the same amount of brand firepower to combat some of those messages.
Do you think, this is going out a little bit of a flyer, but do you think that the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, the $1.2 trillion plan just legislated at the end of last year, do you think it's, particularly for the water sector, water, wastewater, more broadly speaking, do you think that its water focus on things like PFAS and lead, I think of the $55 billion, is it $20, $25 billion is going to those two points of focus? Is that raise red flags and tells everybody, hey, we've got major problems? Or will people look at it and say, you know what, it's about time we fix this, we address this, our water is clean? I mean, it can cut both ways, right?
It can. I mean, I don't think from an optics point of view, obviously, it's unhelpful when you have like a lead pipe crisis in Newark, New Jersey, and the local news is showing, you know, bottles and bottles of water being delivered to save the day, right? I mean, we've seen that in whether it's Flint, Michigan or Newark or wherever. So yeah, I mean, I think obviously addressing the problem first kind of exposes the problem. I mean, my view on it though is it's, if we look at, you know, I guess your question before about, is this like a threat to municipal utilities? If you think about it, what percent of municipal utility water supply is actually being used for drinking, you know, which I think it's usually in an average household, what is it, like less than 10%? Most of it's like your dishwasher, maybe your sprinklers or toilets, what have you. So it's not like the lion's share of a municipal water utility's revenue is coming from consumption of the drinking water, right? I mean, it's still very important. It's the most sort of sensitive piece of it because it's a public health issue. But you know, I think what I'm just trying to say is if we put it into context, obviously the bottled water market and municipal water utilities providing drinking water, they're going to have to live alongside each other. And it's very ingrained in the culture at this point. I mean, what Eric was saying before, if, you know, a third are drinking bottled water all the time, and would you say like 17% are not drinking any tap water at all. I mean, that those are very compelling figures, which mean that it's very ingrained in the culture and it's going to probably stay that way for a while.
What I would love to know is how many people are bathing in bottled water. That would really show the extreme of how far we've come. And I wouldn't put it past, you know, I feel like it's a gossip column, page six. Look who's bathing in bottled water.
Just crack a can of liquid death and just pour it all over your head.
No, that's a good one. So look, I mean, you know, I think we've covered a lot of aspects of this market. And I think this is something, Eric, you in particular, but I think we've all been looking at and the liquid death fundraising efforts, you know, is we noted that they've raised, just recently raised $75 million. I think they've raised about $125 million in total. So it really is amazing the power of the marketing machine and its influence on the water sector as a whole. This is not, it's somewhat unique in that respect. So, and I think to one of your points, I think it was you, Keith, is there are a lot of lessons to be learned for the municipal utilities and anybody really associated with it, whether it be government, whether it be users, but also the vendor side. of the equation as well. So unless you guys have anything else to add, I just wanted to circle up, figure out, maybe people would like to hear what you're working on. Eric, we'll start with you.
Sure. I mean, maybe let me just throw one more number out there, just to your last point about kind of the fundraising and the investment effort. I mean, just to put things in comparison, one of the kind of major ongoing research initiatives that we have is we're looking at venture funding in the water technology space, right? So a lot of digital water, but also we look at smart irrigation, you know, hardware software providers. We look at advanced treatment technology providers, and we're kind of looking at their VC, you know, fundraising activity. And I just went back through the database this morning, and the average funding round that we see for these kind of like water technology firms that are trying to solve problems in the municipal or industrial or agricultural water market is about $10 million average fundraising amount, compared to, you know, $75 million for this, you know, for Liquid Death, right? And I think that in and of itself is telling about kind of investor priorities, that as much as we're hearing investors and financial players talking about ESG and sustainability, you know, it's so much easier for a company like Liquid Death to raise so much more money. Certainly the sales returns or the kind of investment returns are higher. I mean, this Liquid Death grew at, according to some of the figures cited in the press release, I mean, they've grown at about almost a 300% compound annual growth rate over the past 2 years, at least an order of magnitude more than the growth rates that we see in kind of the digital water space or the water technology space. So I get it. But on the other hand, if you're going to be talking about, you know, really being serious about corporate sustainability and ESG in the investment space, you know, we need more capital flowing to these really valuable, smart, and you know, impactful technologies that can actually help in the municipal water sector and solve some of those problems, versus just kind of bypassing that sector altogether and you know, going to this more kind of consumer focused, you know, marketing approach. So that's I'll get off my soapbox. In terms of research, we're working on forecasts as always. We're going to be doing some work on the metering market, you know, really digging into the smart meter sector and actually a lot of intersections there with, you know, kind of how people are interacting with their water in their homes, and you know, really interesting research that we've done recently and that we're going to be doing in the future. And then also we've got a team member who's working on really understanding innovative and kind of progressive utilities. I mean, there certainly are, we didn't mention too many names on this podcast, but there are a lot of utilities out there that are being really good about using technology, using digital tools to just be better about a lot of these challenges, whether it be managing their water quality and their networks or their assets or their relationships with their customers. And so we're going to be doing some kind of benchmarking and profiling of who we see as some of the leading kind of global lights in the digital water market.
Great. Yeah, I'm sure everybody is looking forward to getting their hands on some of that research. Keith, to the extent you can talk about what's going on with the consulting business and more broadly Bluefield, what's on your plate these days?
Yeah, so I would say over the last 6 months, I may have mentioned this in a previous podcast, I've definitely seen more interest in smart sewers. So how can you manage better sewer networks using sensors, data loggers, analytics? So we've had a few projects lately focused on that. You know, what kind of technology can you apply to, for some municipal sewer operators become compliant and reduce overflows and inflow and infiltration and those kinds of pain points that they've faced for decades, basically. So seeing a lot more investor interest and technology provider interest in smart sewers. The other area we've been spending a lot more time on lately, which is, you know, a market that's been around for a long time, but it's very important. It's kind of at the core of utility business model is metering. Metering is a key area of interest going forward in terms of digitalization of networks and how smart meters can provide data that can help utilities make better operational decisions and better asset management decisions. So we've been helping some investors and technology providers looking at the metering space. And that's pretty much the main two things that we've been focused on right now. And looking forward to another strong year.
All right, guys. Well, thanks a million and really appreciate your time and look forward to 2022 with you guys. It already looks to be a great year, but this is a good way to kick off the Future Water. So thanks for your time and let's all talk again soon.
Thanks a lot, Reese.
Thank you, Reese. Talk to you soon.
All right, guys. Take care. All right. So there you have it. That's a wrap. I want to wish everyone a happy new year in January 2022. But before we sign off, please subscribe to the Future Water Podcast. Give us a review. Secondly, send us a note to waterexperts@bluefieldresearch.com if you have any topic ideas or just questions about what we're talking about. And lastly, tell a friend about it. That's what it's all about. This podcast and these water industry insights have been brought to you by the one and only Bluefield Research. To learn more about us, visit us at bluefieldresearch.com. Take care, be well, be safe.